Carnivores Don't Get Sunburn. Hosted by Carrie Mann. Dive into the extraordinary journey of rediscovering optimal health through the carnivore diet. Here, we share powerful transformations from reversing chronic illnesses to achieving peak human potential. Each episode, we'll explore the real stories of those who've turned their lives around, embracing a diet that's as natural as the sun. Stay tuned as we uncover the science, the success stories, and the secrets to thriving on this ancestral diet. Plus, don't miss our exciting documentary highlights featuring a diverse range of carnivore champions. Ready to challenge the conventional? Let's get started.
Today, we're going to be talking about something that's maybe a little bit scary. I recently had my advanced lipid panel done. I'll be honest with you, Dr. Nelson, I'm slightly nervous. I was hesitant to start carnivore because I had congestive heart failure, an irregular heartbeat, still a ticking time bomb. I hear all of that. Like, I'm gonna die. I need to stop carnivore.
Total cholesterol was high. But calling it pre-diabetes is like calling someone pre-pregnant. You're either pregnant or not, but the greatest risk would be type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, number 2, hypertension. You have a bunch of other things that are not taken care of and they are not emphasized and they should.
Have you ever had that little voice in the back of your head that says, I wonder what's really going on with my health? Maybe you've made some lifestyle changes, eating better, exercising more, but deep down, you still don't know if it's actually making a difference. I have been there. That's when I realized I needed more than just guesswork. I needed some answers. I needed some data. That's why I had my lipid panel, testosterone, A1C, and, as we're going to see in today's video, my advanced lipid panel, also known as a cardiac IQ test done, through today's sponsor, LabCorp On Demand. With LabCorp On Demand, you can choose and purchase tests online, then simply stop by a LabCorp patient service center for sample collection. No doctor's appointments needed. It's convenient and it gives you the kind of knowledge that helps you take real control of your health. In today's video with Dr. Nelson, I'm going to go over my advanced lipid panel that I had taken from LabCorp On Demand, and I'm going to share all of my numbers with you and what it means for you. I think it's very important that we look at the quality of our cholesterol, not just the quantity of it, and we can do that with an advanced lipid panel. Huge thank you to LabCorp On Demand for sponsoring today's video. Visit LabCorp On Demand with the link in the description below, also seen here on the screen, and use code HOMESTEAD to get 20% off select tests. Then, make an appointment or walk in one of LabCorp's 2,000-plus patient service centers for sample collection. Huge thank you to LabCorp On Demand for sponsoring today's video. Now let's get started.
Hello, welcome. I'm Carrie here from Healing Humanity. And today I'm thankful, grateful, blessed to welcome the amazing Dr. Nelson from Kilts Health to the channel. Welcome, Dr. Nelson. How you doing?
Hello, I'm doing great.
Dr. Nelson, I appreciate you so much. I thank you for coming on here. Before we jump in, people are going to be asking, how can I find Dr. Nelson?
I work with Dr. Kilts. I'm the director of health strategy at Kilts Health. So drkilts.com is a website, and my own channel is at The Real Dr. Nelson on YouTube.
I will have links in the description below for that. Today, we're going to be talking about something that's maybe a little bit scary. Maybe it doesn't need to be. I don't know, but I'll be honest with you, Dr. Nelson. I'm slightly nervous. I was hesitant to start carnivore because I had congestive heart failure, an irregular heartbeat. I was always fatigued. All sorts of issues with my heart. I was on a lot of medication. And so I keep getting these heart tests done, Dr. Nelson, and they're looking promising. But every time I do one, someone's like, oh, no, wait, you got to get this one done. You're still a ticking time bomb. I hear all of that. Well, long story short, I recently had my advanced lipid panel done. And Dr. Nelson, like, I started looking at it and I don't know what I'm looking at. I have a rough idea what I'm supposed to look for. So could we maybe talk just briefly, like, what is the difference? Because all my life I've had so many blood tests. It's always been a basic lipid panel.
So a basic lipid panel includes total cholesterol, includes triglycerides, includes LDL cholesterol, and includes HDL cholesterol. And then there'd be some calculation of the non-HDL cholesterol. And that's probably all it's going to give you. It will calculate out of those results some ratios like LDL to HDL ratio, total cholesterol to HDL ratio. You can do that with your own results. The one I'd like to look at first out of those will be triglyceride to HDL ratio. But yeah, that's a basic lipid panel.
Right. And it seems like a lot of people, probably myself included, you, especially when we do carnivore, will see those numbers on the basic lipid panel and just flip out. Like, I'm gonna die. I need to stop carnivore. And I guess there's other things that we could be looking at and maybe should be looking at. And there's other factors. Like, I know you emailed me some pretty interesting things too. I have that chart too. We could pull up and look at as well. But besides the basic lipid panel, I went and got my advanced lipid panel, which digs in deeper. I think from what I learned from Dr. Ovedia, the advanced lipid panel will kind of show you the quality of your cholesterol, where maybe the basic lipid panel is more just kind of the quantity. It's not as maybe indicative of having heart disease.
So the lipid panel measures, the basic lipid panel is going to measure the lipoproteins and cholesterol content. So it's a picture. The advanced lipid panel looks at the particle numbers of all the different lipoproteins, and it's a more direct measurement of the lipoproteins and not exactly the cholesterol, by the way. It's thought to be more accurate as well. And then it can divide the different lipoproteins, like the LDL or HDL or the intermediate density lipoprotein, IDL, it will count the particles of each of those. And amazing technology, you know, it's the same nuclear medicine resonance, that's why it's called NMR. And basically, it's measuring all the lipoprotein sizes as well. And they're smaller and bigger, smaller, dense. LDL, for example, is thought to be more atherogenic than large and buoyant LDL. Okay? So that helps you determine the quality of the cholesterol, which is what Dr. Ovedia always refers to.
Should we just take a quick peek at the basic lipid panel and see
sure.
if anything stood out?
So,
I'll pull my screen up too. I know this is kind of weird, but I've got everything in a project in ChatGPT. I know a lot of people are going to be rolling their eyes right now, but I have so much data. So it's kind of easy for me to share my screen this way.
So shall we take a look at... I mean, you sent me the LabCorp test results and the advanced lipid panel on the CIC score.
Right. We can look at, any of those. And I guess I have to be careful because I've had several tests done, basic lipid panels, which is really weird too, by the way, Dr. Nelson. I think I had one like 2 weeks apart and the numbers were drastically, maybe not drastically, but they were significantly different. But this is when I'm in ChatGPT now. I just pulled up. I said, what's my basic lipid panel? It said, here's one of the recent ones that it did. So it shows my, I don't know if we can, maybe I can make this a little bit bigger. Total cholesterol was 246, HDL 74, triglycerides 57, LDL 161, and non-HDL cholesterol was 172.
I have your August 1st lab results here.
Okay.
But I think I have some from... May, I guess. So August, this looks like they collected August 1st. So this is the last one that I, from what I see.
Okay.
And I see a total cholesterol of 272. So that is marked as high. And it is high. Now, when I graduated from medical school, that would probably not be considered high. I think at the time, top number was either 250 or 300 for total cholesterol. So they have continued to decrease the higher, the upper limit of normal. The triglycerides were 46, and that's a very good number. The HDL cholesterol was 71. That's also a very good number. The non-HDL cholesterol is 201, and the LDLC was 195. Okay. However, you had had about 3 months before some higher triglycerides, by the way. So these triglycerides are a lot better.
Right.
If we're only looking at the, I would say cover that Applebee for the moment. If we're only looking at the basic lipid panel, and that we all have, the poor man's guide to, and I should mention insulin resistance, is triglycerides and HDL ratio, okay? Because cholesterol numbers really don't change much from dietary cholesterol or saturated fat. It's not affected as much as what the blood sugar, the insulin resistance does. So they are affected by insulin resistance, glucose levels, more than by dietary sources. I think, do you have some thyroid tests here?
I'm not sure. Let me see.
Okay. So the comment regarding that is this. I never treat what, when I was more into treating cholesterol numbers, I would not treat cholesterol numbers unless the thyroid was normal, because thyroid always affects the cholesterol numbers. And cholesterol numbers are almost like blood sugar. They change from day to day. There might not be giant, huge changes, but in particular, the triglycerides can be very high and very low from one day almost to the other.
That really surprised me, because I don't know how this worked out, but I had about 3 basic lipid panels done just over the course of a couple of months. And I'm like, I just eat carnivore and I fasted the same way before each of them. And it was like you just said, I believe it was the triglycerides were kind of significantly different between each, which I guess is just a good note for people. Cause I think a lot of people get their basic lipid panel done and they make like lifelong decisions. Like, I'm going to change everything based on this. They could go get
this one test that day. And sometimes they don't even, as far as fasting, you should probably fast 12 to 16 hours. Not much longer, probably not much shorter. The main number that gets affected is the triglycerides, by the way, in that regard. But, all right, so going back to the numbers, yes, your cholesterol, total cholesterol was high, but triglycerides were 46, lower than your HDL, which means your triglyceride to HDL ratio is less than 1. Right?
Right.
The non-HDL cholesterol is something most doctors will not direct treatment to. However, the ACL is to, it's supposed to be the protective one. And if you take the ACL out of the equation, the rest are thought to be atherogenic molecules. And remember, we're measuring the lipoproteins that carry cholesterol in this particular test. We're not measuring the particle numbers or the size of the particles either. All right. And just as a, I mean, you also have some other tests here, all your CBC and comprehensive metabolic panel, urine analysis, all that was good.
Yeah. The only other thing that really stood out that I was kind of happy about was my testosterone. I think it said 613. And I hadn't realized I had it tested earlier, but the last time I had it tested was about 15 years ago, and it was around 300.
And that's pretty good. You're right smack in the middle you're at the mean, statistically speaking. Testosterone can also vary a little bit. Doesn't vary as much. And so, you know, that's a good number to have. I think mine was around that. Funny that I had gone to Hack Your Health last year, and I had done just a few weeks before, or maybe a couple of months, at the testosterone level. And someone who was there selling a testosterone supplement was doing a free test, and it seems everybody was coming low. I don't know. My test by the lab had said it. I was near 600, so I didn't buy the supplement.
Right. And my A1C was 5.2, which I believe that was maybe one of the first times I've ever had that tested, surprisingly. Or maybe I did many years ago, but I never did recently other than that one.
So that's a very good number. We consider when we go above 5.6, pre-diabetes. And when it goes beyond 6.5, we call it diabetes. It's just a gradient on the same scale. I think we need to name it something different, because I think once you go beyond 5.7, I have seen complications of diabetes when the patient was never or has never been diagnosed with diabetes, because they start happening as soon as you go from 5.6 to 5.7. Complications, like major complications, all-cause mortality goes up. Cancer incidence goes up. Cancer, a lot of it's caused, or you have a higher risk by having diabetes or pre-diabetes. And cardiovascular events go up, not at 6.5, but at 5.6 to 5.7. So my issue with that, I don't know if I am alone in this, but calling it pre-diabetes is like calling someone pre-pregnant. You're either pregnant or not. You either have diabetes or not. Could be at an early stage, but you already have the metabolic dysfunction,
right,
that you could call diabetes. Anyways, so 5.2 is excellent. Even when you're, you know, studies show that it's very important when you go beyond 5.6, you start having more complications, and the line is flat up until you get around that number. But there are many people who believe that your A1C, to be sure that you are really, that you don't have any insulin resistance or insulin insensitivity. Some people have a problem with the insulin resistance name, but you should be no more than 5.2, perhaps. Some people think 5.3, 5.4, 5.5, 5.6, you already having some insulin resistance before that number crosses the 5.6, which takes us to one of the other tests that you had here, I don't know, based some of these calculated numbers are proprietary algorithms that the lab that's doing it has. And they did a diabetes risk index on you, which is a totally calculated number based on the cholesterol changes, and they put you at a high risk of diabetes. Don't know. With a 5.2 hemoglobin, your triglycerides being normal, I will have to dig more into how they calculate. Some of these formulas are proprietary, and they don't share them, by the way.
Yeah, I was scratching my head at that one, especially looking at the other numbers. It seemed like it was something unique to them. But just real quick, I don't know if we want to talk about this now, but when we're looking at the A1C, is it fair to say that that is something people should probably maybe be more concerned about versus just the basic lipid panel numbers?
Yes, because like I said, diabetes, any metabolic dysfunction that includes glucose levels, insulin resistance, insulin sensitivity, affects the cholesterol numbers, right? And we know this to the point that the big labs have come up with ways of determining your insulin resistance levels based on the cholesterol numbers without even using insulin, by the way, in the calculation, or using glucose in the calculation. So a couple of things. You could be for 20 years having normal fasting blood sugars, having a normal A1C, and still based on your pattern of eating, your fasting insulin, your insulin levels could be high because your body is taking care of business, right? So you eat a lot of carbohydrates, you secrete a lot of insulin to bring that down, and you enter sort of a vicious cycle with the diet where you're putting more carbohydrates into the system, your body is secreting more insulin, and at some point, your body starts to ignore the high levels of insulin. So at that point, you're starting to break the system a little bit, but still you could go several years, maybe at that point, not more than 5 to 10 years, but you're going to end up having very likely diabetes, prediabetes, metabolic syndrome, PCOS, and there's 30, 40 or more conditions that are a result of hyperinsulinemia. So the A1C, which gives you the last 3 months, is an average of the last 3 months. It's a good test to have, but it doesn't tell you anything beyond the 3 months, by the way. It just tells you what has happened in the past 3 months, your average blood sugar, and that's it. Do you do a fasting insulin with this?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. All right. We're going to ask.
I was going to say that really amazing chart you sent me an email. I have access to that now. If you want to talk about that or show it on the screen, just let me know. I can click it on.
All right.
Should we take a look at her now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Here we go.
So this is an article that Professor Timothy David Oakes, and you can put the link in the description to the full study. I recommend everybody reads it, but it is a scientific paper. It's a reevaluation of the Women's Health Study. It's a big study, lasted more than 20 years, with thousands and thousands of, I think the number was You see it there, 28,000 women. That's a large study. Still epidemiological studies, and we do know that they have some downsides to it. They don't give you causation, but you can determine whether something is associated with something else. In this case, whether one of these 12 things here was associated with the development of coronary heart disease specifically. And when we look at that table, the big red number that's the largest there, it's almost 11, is type 2 diabetes. All right? So what is the biggest risk for the development of coronary heart disease? It is type 2 diabetes. Now, a lot of people concentrate on the bad cholesterol, right? The LDL-C cholesterol. And if you take a look at that table and you go quickly to the very bottom, number 11 out of those 12 is LDL-C cholesterol with a hazard ratio of 1.38. So one being the general population, 1.38 means a 38% greater risk of having a heart attack or coronary heart disease than the general population, whereas having type 2 diabetes is almost 1,100%.
Wow.
When compared to the general population, because that's what that almost 11 there means. I mean, if you want to be exact, it's 10.71. So this is what is called a very strong signal that if you're going to worry about LDL cholesterol, and I'm not saying it's not a risk, it's not absolute risk. We're going to review the particle numbers, but the greatest risk would be type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, number 2, hypertension, obesity, smoking. Even family history is under 2, by the way. And 2 is generally considered numbers that are, even though they might be statistically significant, is not a strong signal for coronary heart disease, right? But you can see on the blue lines are all tests. Insulin resistance is almost 7, right? Same point, 6.40. Triglycerides are over 2, it's 2.14. So if you had only the basic lipid panel to go on, what's more important as a risk for coronary heart disease? Well, triglycerides are a higher risk than the LDL or bad cholesterol. Apolipoprotein is 1.89, non-HDL cholesterol 1.67. Almost everything you can measure is a higher risk than the LDL-C. And inflammatory biomarkers came at number 12. And we do look at those, usually high sensitivity C-reactive protein, but that has a lesser risk for coronary heart disease than many of the other things. It did come at the bottom.
That's amazing. It really is incredible. I mean, like you said, we're not saying you don't have to worry about LDL, but so what is there, 11 other things that could be considerations that almost nobody even considers? It's like everyone I talk to, they're just LDL, LDL, LDL. And
yeah, they go straight to the number 11 there, and you have a bunch of other things that are not taken care of and they are not emphasized, and they should. Nowadays, diabetes nowadays is pandemic levels. And I know I'm not exaggerating, it might seem so. We have pandemic levels. More people die of diabetes and diabetes complications than almost anything. Okay, because cancer, strokes, heart attacks could become complications of diabetes. most people don't die of the diabetes per se. Diabetes is basically elevated blood sugars. There are some criteria about the number and the many hours that the high blood sugars may last. But at the end of the day, is not what people usually die from. They die from the complications of diabetes, which are multiple, very well known. So we're not going to go over that. But so in your case, you didn't give me, if you had any old blood tests from when you were 100 pounds more than now. But if I had to take a guess, well, I can tell you, you probably had metabolic syndrome because you did take blood pressure medication.
Yep.
Were you pre-diabetic, diagnosed pre-diabetic at some point? Yeah, you don't remember?
If I had to bet, I'd say I was, but I don't recall them ever saying that to me. I don't know how I couldn't have been.
So we're guessing, but triglycerides were probably high, HDL was low.
Fatty liver.
You had a mini stroke, you have fatty liver. You have all the elements, basically, to say that you have metabolic syndrome, which you don't now, okay? So if you remember the graphic we were seeing, metabolic syndrome, I believe, was the second one there.
Yeah, right? Second one.
So, and then you also, you were taking blood pressure medication.
Yeah.
Okay. You were obese.
Yep.
Okay. So these are things that need to be taken into consideration. I'm not advocating that you ignore your cholesterol numbers, but when you put it in perspective, these are the things that you need to modify the most to decrease your risk the most. Because if you have diabetes, I have or had diabetes, that's my biggest risk of having a, and this particular study was measuring coronary heart disease, but it's the same process in the brain. Strokes and heart attacks are basically the same process. One is in the heart, one is in the brain. In the brain, you can also have hemorrhagic strokes, which are a little bit of a difference. But all those other factors are more important to modify. I'm not saying the LDL cholesterol may not be important. Even in our community, I was talking to a cardiologist who is a very, he's low carb. As a matter of fact, it was a low carb USA San Diego just a few weeks ago, last month. And he still believes that the cholesterol is important, but he also believes, like Dr. Varia and perhaps like me, that we need to look at the particle numbers and at the circumstances. Okay, everything has to be put into context. If your LDL is high, but also your triglycerides are high, your HDL is low, you have insulin resistance, or you have pre-diabetes hypertension, which also is from insulin resistance, you have diabetes, you have the perfect storm to have a heart attack or stroke. Okay? So if you eliminate all of them, great. If you're able to eliminate most of them and there is one thing left, which does not seem to be the main determinant, make your own conclusions.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing in retrospect that's crazy to me is when I had all those issues and I was 100 pounds heavier and I was sick, the only talk was really like, let's put you on a statin, let's put you on medication. And I had all of those other 10 or so things that I could have been addressing that I feel like were the actual root cause of potentially getting heart disease in the first place, inflammation, insulin resistance, those things. We never talked about those. We talk about statins. And then, we don't have to talk about statins now because we could go off on a whole other conversation. But you've talked about it before. And Dr. David Diamond, I just listened to his presentation on it. And the fact that one out of 100 people, and those are the good numbers. He actually had worse numbers for a particular brand of statins, but one out of 100 people see a benefit. 99 out of 100 don't. We're just talking about statins now, and then there's 10 other things that we could be focusing on that seems in most cases to just nobody talks about them. It's just like go in there and throw them on a statin because of their cholesterol. It just seems so backwards.
So if your doctor tells you, oh, I got to put you on a statin, what are they trying to do? They are trying to, even if they're not explaining it to you this way, they are trying to decrease your risk of what? Of atherosclerosis. Or they are trying to reverse atherosclerosis. And that's why they are offering you the statin. But if they are offering you the statin along with ignoring if you have any of the other 10 things that have a higher hazard ratio for coronary heart disease, then that is probably a disservice. That's my opinion, because you have a medication that has been marketed as this great thing. In the case of the one in particular, I'm not going to even mention the names, not worth it, but one there, the numbers of all of them are very similar, by the way. So if you have over 3.5 years, I think the study lasted thousands of people, and those without medication had a 3% incidence of heart attacks over the 3 years. I don't think it was per year, over the 3 years, 3.5 years. And with the medication, it was down to 1.9%, right? That means 1.1% difference between the placebo group and the medication group. Now, that's not how they sold it to me when they came to the office 30 years ago trying to convince me to write for this prescription. They sold it to me as having a 36% relative risk reduction in heart attacks, okay? Where did that number come from? It wasn't magic. It was just a manipulation of statistics.
Yeah.
It is a real number, by the way. If you don't believe me, just divide 1.1 by 3.
Yeah.
That's where the number comes from.
Right.
But they never told me the absolute risk reduction was really 1%. If you take 100 men with medication, 100 men without the medication, 3% and 1.9%, you know, if we're talking about just 100, it's probably 2, because we, you know, but the percentage was 1.9. So, yeah, there'll be a difference of heart attacks in the two groups of just one person. Not 36.
Yeah.
One.
It's like false advertising. I don't know. It's criminal. It's so misleading, because I remember seeing commercials.
But may I remind you that it is a real number.
Yes, it is.
It's a manipulation of statistics.
Manipulation.
Mark Twain, at least it's credited to him, that he said there are lies, damn lies, and statistics.
Yeah. When we interviewed Rancher Maggie, she quoted that as well. But I was just going to say, I remember seeing commercials, and I did a video on this a while ago, so I did some more research, but they used to put that in the commercials too. 36% risk reduction, and I would hear that and be like, oh, the odds of me getting a heart attack are going down by 36%. I should probably take a statin. Had they told me 1 in 100 see a benefit, 99 out of 100 see zero benefit, plus there could be side effects, I would be thinking a lot differently about that. So it's just crazy they do that.
You mentioned the side effects. So I'll mention just one of them. There are multiple side effects. There's a long list of things that can happen with statins. But one of them is there is an absolute risk increase. This is also a statistical number, but it's an absolute risk increase of developing diabetes or worsening your insulin resistance with all the statins, and they have different numbers, but that number, so you have a decreased risk of 1.1%, while your absolute risk increase for diabetes is more than 1.5%.
So we go back to this chart, which type 2 diabetes on the top of the thing that you want the least, you increase the risks of getting by taking statins. I don't know, Dr. Nelson, the whole statin things is just blowing my mind. And I know Dr. David Diamond was talking about this. There's some studies that show increased odds of dementia, but it's one of those things where it's like, how do we know when literally we put every single person on a statin? Would they have had dementia anyways? Are they having it worse? Do they just think, well, this is just old age, but it's really the statins? And then just the fact they're like, they're just pushing them so hard. I remember I interviewed Dr. Chafee and he's like, is there going to be a point where we're giving these to just children? Like a baby's born, let's put them on a statin. Like, when does it stop? And all for 1 out of 100.
The other factor that's very interesting here is they do reduce cholesterol. I can say, yes, taking a statin will reduce the cholesterol. Will that reduction of cholesterol avoid you having a heart attack? Okay, and the evidence is the 1%, right? However, I think the statins work maybe in a different way. Because many of the molecules we're going to discuss later also have an effect on coagulation. And there's a theory out there that the plaque formation is the remnant of clots, okay? And, for example, the LP little A that we're going to talk about is just an LDL particle with a little tail of something that interferes with clot lysis, with breaking down the clots. So it is thought to increase your atherogenicity. One of the things it's doing is interfering with that clot resorption. So, and there are multiple other molecules involved in this that have to do with clot formation. So there are some people that believe that might be a more important thing to look at into. It is not the most popular. It has been around for a while, but it's not the most popular theory. But if you want a good book on that, The Clot Thickens by Dr. Malcolm Kendrick, he also wrote The Cholesterol Con. So he's a self-professed cholesterol skeptic. And so it's a perspective right to have when you're taking all these things into consideration. I think the statins might work because they have a weak anticoagulant effect.
Interesting. All right. Well, should we take a look at the advanced lipid panel?
All right.
Are there other names for this, Dr. Nelson? And
NMR lipoprotein test is one of them. Most labs will know, but you can call it advanced lipid panel or a lipoprotein fractionation is another term that's used. And it's basically the technology used is NMR, nuclear medicine resonance.
Is this something that is ordered regularly by doctors, or do you really have to kind of ask for it or fight for it? Or
most doctors, most primary care doctors or other primary care providers, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, most of the time they won't order this. They know it exists. I'm pretty sure they most know, but they probably will not do this on a routine basis. And it's not that expensive. And even if you ask, they might tell you, no, your insurance is not going to cover it. Or even if they don't say it, they might say, it's not needed, because in the back of their mind is, I don't know what to do with it.
Right. Well, this was a thing I wish I would have had before I went on the 8-year-long journey of taking statins. Maybe that wouldn't have changed it, but then the CAC was another one, but I didn't realize these were tests that were even available. But Yeah, if we want to take a look at it, let's see. So this is my advanced lipid panel. I can pull up some screenshots too if we want. Let's see if this will fit on here. Here's one. Now it's loading up here. Here we go. Well, it doesn't all fit on one page, but most of it's on there right now. Except my lipoprotein A is on another screen.
It's all right. We can talk about the first thing there that says pattern.
Okay.
That's a good pattern. That's an A pattern, not a B pattern. That's, yeah, it's the good proportions. So without even looking at the rest, I'm not saying that the rest is not important, but without looking at the rest, that's a good thing.
All right.
And trying to look to see what page that is. Okay. It's one of the last pages. Okay. So now what we have there, though, is the total particle count, right? Or a fractionation, the LDL peak size, that's large LDL particles. And then we have the ApoB. Now, I saw two, you repeated the ApoB in August, and these tests are from May. So it was 121, and in August was 142, very similar number. So apolipoprotein B, every, whether it's a VLDL, an LDL, an IDL, they all have one molecule of ApoB attached to it. So rather on depending on only the LDLC, if you measure the ApoB, it's supposed to give you a more accurate risk factor. The higher the number, the more risk that you have a heart attack. But let's take this into context. The context being that other chart that where we had the ApoB or the apolipoprotein just said, didn't say A or B or anything like that, but it was ApoB. I think it was 1.69 compared to everything else that was higher, including triglycerides. Triglycerides had a hazard ratio over 2 in that graph, remember?
Right.
All right. So LP liter A is 28. That is very good. LP liter A, some people recommend you only do it once in your lifetime because it's always going to be either high or low. There's not the medications that are available.